Okay, move out.
You're listening to the Valor Podcast with Nick Lehman, a show highlighting the people who defend the United States of America and those who support them.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Hello and welcome to the Valor Podcast. A little fun fact for you. A landlocked state such as New Mexico can have a Navy ship named after it, or even a submarine. More on that in a minute. First, I want to thank our show sponsors, the Hershey Miyamura Korean War Chapter. They've been really special to me and have been supporting the things that I have done with the Valor Podcast and a few other veteran affairs that I've contributed to. And recently, their president, Jerry Chapman, he passed away a couple days ago. And so I just wanted to share a couple story about Jerry and what he did. He was in the Navy. He was in the ship service during the Korean War. And I got to meet him a couple years ago and really became fast friends. I know it was kind of at the tail end of his life, but he was a very, very nice guy. And here's a little story. One time we were hanging out waiting for one of the Korean War veterans to come back from the airport, and they wanted one of the people there found out that that gentleman was coming back, and so Jerry was kind of informing them, and I knew who they were looking for and who was on the plane and the name of the person that was on the plane. And the lady was shocked on all the things I knew about the passenger, because the person that was coming back was flying with one of my friends, and they were queuing me in on the, and she asked, "How? Why do you know all this stuff?" And then without a beat, Jerry said, "Well, he's CIA." And it took, and I don't really fully think she even discounted the fact that I might have been CIA. So he was always joking, always having fun, but when it got to being for the veterans and looking out for his men in the Korean War Chapter and other veterans around the state and even the country, he was a very good man. The United States and the country and the world lost a great man. So, you know, here's to Jerry Chapman and what he has done for us and for future generations. So, with the encouragement and support of President Theodore Roosevelt, the Navy League of the United States was formed to disseminate to citizens of our nation information concerning the condition of our naval and maritime forces. The objective and purpose of the Navy League was simple: to educate, motivate the American people. We are joined by Lieutenant Commander Damon Runyon, United States Navy retired, who has chaired the Navy's League's USS New Mexico SSN 779 committee for the past 2 years. Thank you for joining us, Lieutenant Commander.
Thank you, Nick, for this opportunity to educate New Mexicans on the status of what we consider a really crowning achievement, is to have a submarine named for our state.
I got to say that, you know, you guys have to be one heck of a pitchman to have been a landlocked state and have a submarine named after you, after the state.
Actually, a little story, Nick. We actually have three submarines named for parts of our state. There is the USS Albuquerque, the USS Santa Fe, and now the USS New Mexico. The USS Albuquerque has served valiantly for the last 33 years and will actually be decommissioned and stricken from the rolls of the U.S. Navy later this month, here in February. Albuquerque will no longer be an active submarine in the U.S. Navy fleet. USS Santa Fe, named for our capital city, has actually been in service since the early 90s and has several more years of active service and is on duty and will be on patrol shortly out in the Pacific region.
That's very cool that we have a committee here, but you know, in terms of a national level, how many committees are there, and how does one started in your state or your region?
Well, the Navy League has chapters in every state and in several foreign countries in an effort to keep people there informed and to serve as maybe a host for Navy sailors that might be pulling into various places. I first ran into the Navy League in the early 80s when they hosted a party for the crew members of the ship that I was on, USS Saratoga. out of the blue, they just said, hey, send as many guys as you can over to this location, and we'll host a party for them here in Palma de Mallorca, Spain, a beautiful island off the east coast of Spain. And that's how I first became aware of the Navy League. It's just a group of citizens, friends of the sea services, friends of the Navy, Marine Corps, Coast Guard, and Merchant Marines, just to try to provide a little support for the people that do the hard things at sea that maybe the military doesn't provide for. Long about the year 2000, Nick, after I had been in back in New Mexico after retiring for a couple of years, I got associated with the Navy League here. And one of the members came to a group meeting in 2000 and said, I don't know if you all are aware of it, but the Navy is about to start naming submarines after states, a new class of submarines called the Virginia class. It's an attack submarine. It's meant to go in harm's way. It's meant to go where the action is. So we got our heads together and we decided, let's see how hard it would be for us, a landlocked state, to get the United States Navy Secretary of the Navy. That's where the Navy ship naming convention comes from, the Secretary of the Navy, to name a ship after our state. And what reason, what hook could we possibly get the Secretary of the Navy to consider naming this low population state way out in the Southwest to have a submarine named for it? Well, the real hook, Nick, is this. New Mexico, as a state, has had more of its citizens serve in the armed forces on a per capita basis than any other state. Our small population, on a percentage, has had more members serve in the Army, Navy, Air Force, Coast Guard, and Marine Corps. The Navajo Code Talkers, the Bataan Death March, just on and on, members of New Mexico have served in every major conflict. So that was our goal. That was our hook to say, hey, Navy, honor our veterans from New Mexico by naming a new submarine after our state. And sure enough, that happened, Nick. We were able to get the support of our congressional delegation, Pete Domenici, Heather Wilson, Bingaman, at that time, to convince the Navy to name a submarine after us. We got every mayor in the state to write a letter. We got hundreds of school kids to flood the Secretary of the Navy's office with letters saying why you should name a submarine after our state. And literally, as almost as a joke, we had a guy in the Secretary of the Navy's office that was informing us, hey, this guy's getting sacks of mail every day. He called us in December of 2004 and said, hey, New Mexico Navy League, if you'll quit sending me letters, I got too many letters, I'll give you a submarine. And so sure enough, on December 6th, 2004, the Secretary of the Navy, Gordon England at the time, flew out to New Mexico on a cold gray day, landed, drove over to the National Hispanic Cultural Center in downtown Albuquerque, and along with Governor Richardson, Marty Chavez, Bingaman, a whole host of other dignitaries from around the state, came in and announced before a large crowd that he was naming hull number 779, the USS New Mexico. That's significant. The Navy has had 779 vessels designated a submersible of some sort. And that's where the hull number 779 comes from. And so on that date, Gordon England named 779 as the USS New Mexico, and that began our legacy as to how we were then going to support the submarine and its crew way out in here in New Mexico.
Yeah, and you touched on it with how strong our military presence here in New Mexico. I know it's strong all across the country, but through this region, through Colorado all the way down to New Mexico, one of our former guests, Doug Sterner, who's the Hall of Heroes contributor and all that, he has attributed that corridor is one of the strongest global war on terror in terms of high-ranking awards like Silver Star, Medal of Honor, Distinguished Flying Cross, and all that. So good on you guys. And you literally won hearts and minds and pestering at the Navy.
That's right. And from that day, we then began to become good friends with whoever the current commanding officer of the submarine was, and many of the crew members. We had the commanding officer out to New Mexico to meet us. We always try our best to make sure that we provide as much resources for people from the ship to fly out here, stay in a hotel, have good meals at great restaurants around New Mexico. And every year we try to bring crew members from the submarine, if they're in port and if they're able to do it, to our state. Every commanding officer of USS New Mexico, and there have now been five since it was first started construction in 2004, have met the governor of the state. Governor Richardson and Governor Martinez have all, between them, have met all five of the commanding officers of USS New Mexico. We've brought them out here. One of the key contributors to the legacy of the USS New Mexico was our association with the Navajo Code Talkers. At the naming ceremony in 2004, we had Chester Nez come out and bless the ceremony in Navajo. At the
He's
one of the 29 original Code Talkers. In December of 2008, when the ship was undergoing a procedure called the keel authentication ceremony, we flew Frank Chi Willetto out to Norfolk. He told us that was the first time he'd ever been on an airplane. He was 81 years old. Frank Chi Willetto was a World War II Navajo Code Talker, Marine Silver Star awardee for his actions during World War II. And yet he'd never been on an airplane. We invited him to come to Albuquerque, and we accompanied him to Norfolk, where he then blessed the submarine in Navajo in front of a crowd of 1,500 people. Brought his corn powder and said his prayer at the podium, then left the podium and went down under the submarine amongst the scaffolding and the wires and touched the submarine, the USS New Mexico, and blessed it with his hands. It was really a touching ceremony. We've also had crew members from the original battleship. We're not the first vessel to be named USS New Mexico. There was actually a World War II battleship named the USS New Mexico, BB-40. And we have brought crew members that served on the battleship to be part of ceremonies surrounding the christening and the commissioning of the USS New Mexico. Christening is where they name the vessel officially by breaking the champagne on it. Commissioning is where the Navy takes possession of it and says, this is now a vessel in our fleet.
You know, the Navy traditions, it's rich. The christening, the smashing of the champagne bottles and all that. And you touched on it when they go into the port. You're saying, hey, you guys want to come over for a party. I mean, that's probably... You got to be prepared when you invite a whole bunch of sailors over for a party. Is that?
That's right. The Navy League. This one instance where I was invited to a party in 1980, on an island off the coast of Spain. The Navy League on that island just threw open their doors and said, "As many guys that want to come can come. Try to keep it under 1,000 if you can." We actually had probably about 150 sailors go to some huge house in Palma de Mallorca for this party. But everything was free. It was just amazing. They were just so thankful to be able to do something for active duty sailors.
Yeah, and going back, Civil War was probably the first time we were seeing, well, you know, even back in the, 15, 16, 1700s, but in the Civil War, that was the start of, the experiments with submarines and other battleships and things like that. It seems like the Navy plays a critical role, and that role has evolved over time. I mean, now, back in the day with World War One, World War Two, and even Korea, you got on the ship and you went over. I mean, now it's C-130s that fly everybody over. But what is it, like to be on a ship and knowing that you're, one, protecting the nation, and two, you're going to be with your shipmates for a long time?
That's right. Yeah, that was a feeling that I'll never forget, Nick. I served 20 years in the U.S. Navy, and I was proud to be a member of three different ship crews, the USS Saratoga, an aircraft carrier, USS Mount Whitney, a command and control ship, and the USS Iowa, a World War II battleship that was brought out of mothballs to carry cruise missiles in the mid-80s. Being at sea, being on a vessel that you know that the United States spent hundreds of millions, if not a billion or more, dollars of valuable taxpayer money to provide you a vessel to keep you safe at sea, that's a pretty awesome responsibility. You know you're standing on a national treasure when you're on a huge ship like an aircraft carrier or a battleship, and you take your job very seriously. Basically, if you're at sea and you're awake, you're working. You're training to make yourself better at your job. You're training for your next rank, or you're doing the duties that you've been assigned. And you take that seriously. Yeah, you sleep a little bit and you come back on watch. You eat a little bit and then you go back on watch. But it's an awesome responsibility to spend literally 24 hours of your day doing nothing but your job. You don't have to commute anywhere. You're already right where you're going to be working. Your food is readily available anytime you want it. So you just become as good as possible. And that's a great feeling to be around crew members like that, that consider their job to be so important that they would do anything to keep the guy next to them alive.
And definitely, and looking at some of these sketches and pictures on the SSN 779 New Mexico and other, you know, even aircraft carriers. I mean, the sleeping quarters are pretty tight. I mean, you don't get the luxury of, you say, a big hotel or a Motel 6, if you will.
That's correct. Yeah, everything is pretty compact, especially on a submarine. The USS New Mexico, most of the men are enlisted men. There's only 13 or 14 officers on board. There's probably about another 13 or 14 chief petty officers, senior enlisted. And most of the men sleep three high, triple bunk beds. One guy about 6 inches off the floor, one guy about 2.5 feet off the floor, one guy about 5 feet off the floor. So you don't have a whole lot of personal space between you and the guy below you. In fact, your bunk, your mattress lifts so that you can put your personal items underneath where you sleep. Yeah, it's a pretty compact situation. On an attack submarine, being that compact, right now the Navy has no women on board attack submarines. There is literally no personal privacy. Large shower rooms, large bathroom, and sleeping quarters. Some of our older ballistic missile submarines, we have a whole other type of submarine that carries long-range ballistic missiles. Their job is to go out and hide and to be a deterrent against anybody attacking our country. Those vessels are much larger. They're almost 600 feet long. They have been able to carve out space on those to be able to provide privacy for it to have women on board. And there is a cadre of female officer and enlisted submarine qualified women on board submarines today. Will that happen on attack submarines? I'm sure they're planning on it, of ways to be able to give them personal privacy on a submarine. It's still going to be somewhat limited, and it's still going to be a difficult challenge for women to do that. But that is a move in the U.S. Navy to be able to integrate women into the submarine force as well as the surface force.
Well, that's a great explanation of the different sizes of the vessels and the submarines. So the New Mexico, to sum it up, is basically a what kind of animal would you equate it to? Because I mean, it's fast, aggressive, it can get to places.
Right. We equate the USS New Mexico and the attack submarine fleet as stealth killing machines. Their mission is to go into harm's way, get close to the action, be where they're needed to be to put cruise missiles or special forces ashore to be able to do missions. So that's the role of the attack submarine. Keep sea lanes free, be where people are traveling, and be able to put some sort of weapon where it might need to be in a very stealthy manner. there may be a situation where some terrorist training camp may just go away one night. No one knows why. No aircraft were detected. And it may have been as a result of some sort of fast attack, submarine attack, without any detection by anyone anywhere.
Yeah, we like seeing those black and white aerial drone videos, seeing the Hilux trucks blowing up and the munitions going away, because I know that is no longer a threat to our nation or other nations that we consider great allies.
Yeah, there's an awful lot of videos out there taken from helicopters and gunships showing people of and trucks on the ground going away, but the New Mexico is not into that kind of a situation where it wants things that it does to be known by the general public or the world.
Oh yeah, definitely. It must be interesting because you were in the intelligence business, so you know you have your top secret clearances and all that, and you understand OPSEC and you know operational security and that, but. There must be that weird look you guys make to each other, like, I know what you guys do, and we won't talk about it, but here's a head nod that you did good.
That's right. Yeah, despite my 20 years of being in the intelligence business and having some of the highest clearances in the Navy, submarine guys still just don't talk literally about what their mission was. They just don't give that information out. And I literally have no idea what the USS New Mexico is doing right now. It's on patrol. Its crew has been gone since before Thanksgiving. They've missed Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, tons of birthdays for their kids, anniversaries for their wives, and they won't be back till sometime in April. Don't even know the date. And so when you deploy on a submarine, you pretty much there's a few ways, but you pretty much lose contact with the outside world.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I mean, because you know, this generation, you know, with Iraq and Afghanistan and the global war on terror, I mean, things happen quick and you got information quick, and so I'm kind of, you know, I don't know, it depends on the situation. I'm more of, you know, less is better kind of guy. But how was that? Like, you know, you kind of can relate to it back in the day because there was no internet or anything like that when you started in your career. But, you know, people wrote and like 5 months later, the letter arrived kind of deal.
That's exactly right. My wife would write me letters from home every day and she'd put a number on the envelope so that when I received maybe a month's supply of letters from my wife, I could read them in chronological order by looking at the number at the top of the envelope. And maybe occasionally I might have long-range HF radio contact through someone gracious enough to use a ham radio to call my wife, but it was very, very limited. I speak at schools, Nick, all the time. I like to speak to fourth and fifth graders and let them know about their submarine, the USS New Mexico. I tell them that life is real hard on board, sleeping in the cramped quarters. And what really gets them is when I tell the kids, and another thing they don't have that you do, there's no internet. They don't have Skype, texting, Twitter. They don't have any of that. And the kids all look at me in amazement like, what? No smartphone? That's exactly right. When they are on missions, they are completely silent. That really gets to the kids today to think, wow, I could be minutes without actually talking to somebody on my smartphone.
Yeah, and I joke with my kids that, you know, for Father's Day, I just want 3 minutes of silence. And I think each year I've asked, and I think we've gotten close to, I think the record is 45 seconds.
So. That's amazing. Yeah. No, quiet and silence is a real big part of your daily routine on a submarine, Nick. Men know how to just go about their business, their jobs, their duties on the ship in a quiet manner. Shoes are softened so that they don't make any noise when walking. Almost everything on the ship that's mechanical is rubber mounted so that it doesn't put any vibration outside the ship or make any clanking noises. And communications, electronic transmissions from the ship are almost non-existent. Unless it's a prearranged time at a certain depth, maybe they receive a packet of data from a satellite or they send a packet of data to a satellite, and that's their communications for the day. you know, maybe a 10-second burst or less to receive orders and to send status reports of what they're doing. And that may be it for the entire day.
That's a shock that my kids and people listening are like, I can't even go 5 seconds without checking my email. Yeah. And so this attack submarine, as you mentioned, it, you know, it can do all kinds of things. And the one thing that I noticed on the fact sheet is there's no periscope anymore. Is that correct? Or what's the new way of doing things?
That is correct. Nick, the, classes earlier than the New Mexico used retractable periscopes to see what's just above the surface. The submarine would come to a prearranged depth and then raise a periscope to come out of the water. We do still have masts on the USS New Mexico, but they just contain sensors, and there's no penetration from that mast into the hull of the submarine. Everything is electronic. So whether it be long-range vision, television cameras, low light, or infrared, all of that data is transmitted back into the submarine without penetrating the hull. So the commanding officer does not have to stand at a periscope at periscope depth to see what's out there. He has all kinds of sensors to just be able to see displays within the control room, giant screen displays in various light levels to be and distances to see what's out there on the surface. Of course, they have sonar to let them know any surface vessel or anything that's out there is putting noise into the water. And the sonar technicians are skilled to be able to say, that's a cargo ship, that's a bad guy, that's a U.S. Navy warship, just from the sound that they put in the water.
It sounds like this attack submarine and the crew on that, and even the highly trained Navy guys that are doing this type of thing are in a sense a sniper. I mean, you're too late if somebody's already snuck up on you with an attack submarine.
That's right. If an attack submarine has detected you and you haven't detected it, it's literally too late. If that's their mission, and they are designed to be stealthy and not detected through the spectrum of sight and sound.
And you went back to, you were talking about how you like to talk to kids and everything like that. What kind of things can average civilians and even, you know, elementary schools can do to help maybe the USS New Mexico or any other ships that are, and vessels that are out to sea that are looking for a morale boost?
Right. As a basic primer, the U.S. Navy has an open public website that gives addresses for people to write letters to crew members literally on any Navy ship or shore facility. Tells you how to get a letter to them. When I go talk to elementary schools, I tell the kids, if you've got further questions for me, because I've only got you for an hour, write them down. Put them in a letter. Dear USS New Mexico crew member, I'm a kid that loves New Mexico. I'm sitting here in Albuquerque or Santa Fe or Las Cruces. I love my state because I ask him to put something in their letter that tells this sailor why they love New Mexico, and then ask him about a job that he does on his ship. And sailors are very proud to be able to tell kids, yeah, I'm a nuclear machinist mate. Yes, I'm a combat medic. Yes, I'm a navigation expert. Yes, I'm a sonar technician. And to give them a little bit of idea of what they do for their job. And I've had great success in getting kids to write letters to the submarine, get them delivered to the submarine and put in the hands of a sailor, and then get an answer back to that student by name and be able to put that letter in his hand.
That's very cool. And, it, you know, they probably take it away, both the sailor and the student. And I like the Navy when I'm asking, well, what's your MOS, the military occupation specialty? Because the Navy is very simple. They're like, I'm a ship's mate, or I'm a, you know.
I'm a torpedo man. Yeah, I'm a navigator. Yeah, I'm a quartermaster. Yeah, all of those jobs that their titles are generally give you an idea of what they do as their MOS, their military specialty. We call it a rating. They wear their rank on their sleeve, and they also wear their rating, a little emblem above their rank that shows what they do. I fire torpedoes. I work on nuclear machines, nuclear-powered machines. I steer the ship. I listen to sounds in the water, all the different ratings, even a cook. Interesting story, Nick. About every 2 years, we pay for two cooks from the ship's galley on board USS New Mexico to fly out to New Mexico. They actually fly into El Paso. They get a car. They drive up to Las Cruces, and they spend 5 days training at La Posta de la Masia in Las Cruces on learning how to cook Mexican food. The owner of that restaurant down there is a retired Navy captain, Tom Hutchinson, and he graciously allows sailors to come into his restaurant, put on their same uniforms they were on cooking in the back in the galley there, and train for 5 days and see how he puts together fantastic Mexican dishes for the people of Las Cruces. They then take those skills back to the ship, and every night on USS New Mexico is Taco Tuesday. They have some sort of Mexican dish.
I love Taco Tuesday. I mean, that's, you're getting my mouth water. I mean, that's almost, I think, to perfect Mexican food and authentic New Mexican food. That's almost equivalent of going to a specialty MOS school.
That's right.
Because you can't have it too hot. You got to have it red or green or Christmas.
That's right.
And for the people that listen in overseas and internationally and even in the country, red or green, that's our chili. And Christmas is when you combine the both. So that little fun facts on there. What I'm noticing, that, you know, all the traditions and things around the Navy and around the vessels and around the ships. What are some things that the New Mexico has, in its short, you know, 10, 12-year life, gained with traditions and you know, mottos and things like that?
Right. Well, every Navy ship has a crest, an emblem that the sailors wear on their uniforms or that is on coffee cups that signifies something about that ship. We had a contest in 2006 where we asked New Mexicans around the state, design for us what you think the ship's crest ought to look like. What should its logo look like? We got 180 entries, and many of the more amazing entries are actually at our website, ussnewmexico.net. We took those entries that were submitted to us on paper and sent them to the crew, and the crew went through a painstaking process of saying, this is the one we would like to be our crest. And the winner of that crest contest was actually a high school art student by the name of Emily Senna out at St. Pius High School. We called Emily. We didn't know who the crews had chosen. They just said, we like entry number 121 or whatever it was. We called that number, and Emily answered, and we said, your design has been chosen by the crew to be the crest for the submarine. And Emily and her mother and father were sent out to Norfolk, Virginia for the christening ceremony and were honored by the crew that they chose her design as their crest. Her design is amazing. It's the most prominent display at our website. It contains the Sandia Mountains. It contains a little electron in the lower left to signify the labs. And it contains the Zia symbol prominently in the middle of the crest with the submarine flowing under the Zia. Rather than just use the Zia symbol, we actually went to the Zia Pueblo and asked their permission through their tribal council to be able to display that symbol on the crest of the USS New Mexico. And they gave us a wonderful proclamation that said the USS New Mexico is authorized to display the Zia symbol on their crest. And that stands today. They've given us blanket permission to use that.
Yeah, that's awesome. And, you know, I know there's a lot of things that open up with the military in terms of, you know, art projects or even new patches for the combat deployed and even that deployment. But it sounds like Emily won like the Publisher's Clearinghouse version of drawing and getting. I mean, her artwork's going to be seen internationally.
Her artwork is going to be seen internationally. It's going to be seen for at least the next 30 years. Emily's a superstar. Emily could go out to Groton, Connecticut, the home port of the USS New Mexico, literally anytime she wanted, and she'd be welcomed aboard with open arms. Her original oil artwork, where she painted the crest of the submarine, is hanging in the officer's wardroom of the USS New Mexico with her name and a picture of her standing next to it, of the picture she painted back in 2006.
That's very cool. And that, yeah, definitely the military men and women, they appreciate those kind of artistic touches of things, of, you know, and they welcome you to open arms. So kind of closing things up here, why don't you give us some great Navy traditions that we as civilians may be looking for, or just kind of seeing passing, you're like, oh, I wonder what that's about.
All right. Well, one of the most impressive traditions that I can recall right now, the USS New Mexico battleship was decommissioned and scrapped by the U.S. Navy after World War II in 1946. So when the ship was decommissioned, it had its last watch. When we commissioned the USS New Mexico in March of 2010, we brought a crew member from that World War II battleship, and we gave him a long glass. It's a long single-eye telescope that the old sailors used to look on the horizon to look for other ships. We gave him that long glass, and 91-year-old George H. Smith then handed that long glass at the ceremony to the officer of the deck of the USS New Mexico, about a 25-year-old officer, as symbolizing passing the last watch from the battleship New Mexico to the first watch of the submarine New Mexico, spanning 65 years of history in that one instance. That was a pretty amazing tradition in my mind. Other traditions include flying flags whenever you're in port. We provide the New Mexico state flag to the submarine to fly alongside the American flag whenever it comes in or goes out of home port. Navy doesn't give them New Mexico state flags. The New Mexico Navy League here in this state provides that to them. So that's another tradition. We've also ask the Navy for their permission, if we gave them the material, could we cover the pilot and co-pilot seats of the submarine and put the curtains of all of the bunks in a Navy Southwest design material? And through a long negotiation and checking the material for fire retardant, the New Mexico is decorated in New Mexico design or Southwest design material in the main control room at the captain seat. Along all of the bunks where the enlisted men sleep, their curtains are in a Southwest design. There's a lot of other traditions. One of our original committee members was a World War II submariner by the name of Leo Davis. Right before Leo died, he asked if there was a way he could be buried at sea. So Leo did pass away in August of 2014. He was cremated, and his ashes were carried by his son, his two sons. I accompanied those two sons to the submarine. Leo was brought on board, his ashes were, with full military ceremony. Whistles, salutes, flag lowering, brought him on board, and at a later date, Leo's ashes were kept on board. Leo was launched out of torpedo tube one in a metal canister, and his ashes—that's
what I'm talking about.
That's right,
America.
And he was buried at sea in an amazing ceremony that was videotaped on board the submarine.
And what's the saying? Flowing seas and
right. One of the traditions we have is when you leave a command, we wish you fair winds and following seas so that you have smooth sailing wherever you go. And so that's been a long-standing tradition to wish someone fair winds and following seas on their journeys through life.
Well, Lieutenant Commander, I have enjoyed this time. We've covered a lot of things and figured out how to support our sailors and everybody that's on vessels and ships. And I got one last question, and I'm pretty sure the parents would probably like the advice, but how do you keep kids quiet like a sailor on a submarine?
Probably the easy answer is you don't. Maybe give them something other to talk about. Maybe give them a duty that will keep them quiet. Maybe give them an incentive to be quiet. Hey, if you're quiet for an hour, I've got these things for you, or you'll be allowed to do this. I don't know. I just know that when you're on a submarine, it's your duty to be quiet. The quieter you are, the less chance of detection, and the longer you're probably going to be around in this world. I don't have the answer for that for you, Nick. I know you probably would love one for your kids, but don't have it.
Hey, well, you could try. I mean, with your background and knowing probably a few SEALs here and there. So anyway, thanks again, Lieutenant Commander, and thanks for listening to the Valor Podcast. Make sure you go like us on Facebook, and you can subscribe on iTunes and Google Play or any podcast management app. Visit our webpage at thevalorpodcast.com. That's thevalorpodcast.com. Finally, find your mission. There are many veteran organizations, nonprofits, and veterans needing your help. I promise you'll make some great friends. Until next time, have a great week.